You're listening to a podcast from 702.
But right now, taking your thoughts on the challenges that you are facing in dealing with government. Or maybe have you completely given up and you're one of those businesses that have really had such a horrible experience that you've decided, that's it. I'm no longer doing business with the state at all. We'll take your calls and your WhatsApp messages. 011-883-0702, 072-702-1702. Head of Financial Education at Old Mutual, John Manyike, joining us now in this conversation. John, good morning, and thank you very much for your time and for joining us today here on the Clement Manatela Show. So we want to explore, John, how SMEs are navigating the space of doing business with the state. I mean, the first thing that one would understand is how processes of finding out that the state is looking for something. How do you do that? Where do you go? Where do you look for these things? And what's the process that you follow?
Good morning to you, Timen, and thank you for inviting me. Yes, I've identified about 12 major challenges that small to medium businesses are struggling with. The very first one is the one you just alluded to: lack of access to information about where are the tenders. So a lot of small to medium businesses might not be aware of a tender bulletin, which is online and it's national. You can always navigate that platform and actually even register your business there, and you would actually get notifications if there's any tenders. But also, you can go to the various provincial departments or even the national departments themselves. In their respective website, they would also put notices of tenders. You can also go to municipalities and look for information about tenders that are suitable to your skill and their business.
Yeah, and everybody is talking here about small business as the key to creating employment, transforming the economy, and so on and so forth. And you're saying you've observed these things, and one is access to information, but secondly, how many of those businesses that or at least services that are being required by the state would require one to have capital already? Is lack of capital in terms of a small business a prohibition, one of the challenges that would emerge as a barrier to entry in being able to access some of these bids?
Absolutely, and that's a major one, because a lot of businesses are struggling with securing funding, and that happens for various reasons. I mean, small businesses struggle with keeping of records, and if you don't keep records, if you want to apply for funding, it becomes very difficult for any credit provider to score you, to look at the viability of funding your business, and also to determine the level of risk they're putting themselves to by investing in the business. Yes, it does become slightly easier when you have an order number and you're able to produce an order for you to actually get funding. But in cases where you need to be able to demonstrate that you can actually do the job, one of the stumbling blocks, because of not having access to funding, it becomes an issue of a track record. So if you've never done that kind of business, the likelihood is that you don't have a business track record. You don't have a business history. So how do you then compete with some of the more established small to medium businesses who have been in the game for quite a while? So at times, most of the time, the funding tends to become a factor.
Yeah. Barring the odd case, maybe I'm saying the odd case wrongly here, maybe the many instances that we certainly report about here in the media where things like experience do not really matter. I mean, if you look at the tenders around the procuring of PPEs, and you had in some instances people who own car washes procuring PPEs with no experience at all in that particular field. But how much of a barrier is this thing of experience?
Well, I think I guess it will also depend on the type of tender and the magnitude of the work to be executed. Can you imagine if government wanted a school or a bridge to be constructed. Surely you need someone with a proper grading to perform that kind of a job. So that becomes them. So I think it will also depend on the degree of work. I mean, if you have, there's a department that's looking for stationery, what experience do you need? Well, even if there is, but it cannot be as sophisticated as when you have to tender for engineering type of work. So I guess that would determine the level of experience that's needed.
Yeah.
And the discretion of the forum that has to decide on the tender.
And how important is a reference letter in that instance?
That's very important, you know, because remember, when you are competing with other, you know, small to medium businesses like yourself who are trying to get in there, so of course they would want to look at if you've done a job, similar job before, they might want to contact some of your previous clients to understand if they were satisfied with the quality of your work and anything else that might come up there. So your reputation, your image becomes very, very critical in such cases.
Yeah. And how do businesses get around that? I mean, how do they get to that two-year threshold? I mean, I think some of the statistics do tell you that most businesses, in fact, don't make it past at least the three-year mark, if I'm not mistaken.
That's true. So I think one way to get around that is to try and find potential partners where you subcontract, at least gain a bit of experience, because in some of the tenders, there may be a requirement that whoever gets the tender must give at least 30% must subcontract it, because government is trying to get people to share and to localize, you know, the tender so that there's other businesses that benefit from there. It's not a bad thing. You know, you don't have to go for the jugular. I mean, you are just starting. You want to start with a half a billion tender. So surely you need to build up and start from somewhere.
We are in conversation with Head of Financial Education at Old Mutual, John Manyike, and you can, of course, be a part of this. Share your experience, some of the challenges and difficulties you've encountered in doing business with government, the tender situation, maybe a situation also around raising funding, situations around challenges around how you navigate the question of two-year experience that is required. How do you navigate the challenges of a lack of capital? And certainly, how did you come about to hear about those particular opportunities, if indeed you have taken advantage of them? 011-883-0702, 0727-0702-1702. John Manyike, having identified at least 12 areas that could certainly be a challenge for you. Raising funding for particular projects. You know, some of the projects require some massive capital outlay in terms of maybe sometimes I think one of the ones that I looked at, you needed to have trucks. One of a friend of mine was applying for, you needed to prove that you've got land where these trucks are going to be kept. Another one was for school transporting, you needed to have a particular kind of bus and so on and so forth. And you look at that and you say, I want to then maybe participate in this, and maybe I can go to the funding institutions and be able to get money to acquire those certain things. It's the funding thing is so cumbersome and it's so administrative in its nature. What are the things that you need to consider here?
Sorry, I had lost you for a minute, Timen.
I'm saying the criteria for funding is so cumbersome in terms of the administration part of it. What are some of the things that you need to take into consideration?
Yeah, so obviously you need to be very clear that you've actually done a proper research, market research for your business. I mean, obviously, for any credit provider, to advance any credit, they want to assess the risk. So they want to put themselves in your shoes to say, if they were running that business, if they took over from me and they were running that business, can they run a viable business to the extent that the business would be able to service the loan? You know, very often, you know, small to medium businesses would apply for funding, but then you see that they have not even taken the risk themselves in their own idea, which they are pitching. You know, so of course, everything else in terms of the credit worthiness comes into play, because you may also have to sign as a surety in the event that the business does not make it and a loan has been advanced. You know, are they going to be able to secure you know, the money by, you know, attaching certain things, because you will be jointly liable, you know, in your personal capacity as a director of the company. So there are a whole host of things that they would look at to satisfy themselves that they're actually funding. But when you have a confirmed order, it makes it easier. It gives credit providers the comfort that there is business. You're just looking for funding, but actually you have secured a business. But when there's doubt of whether this business is going to be making money, that's why when they look at your financial records and they see that your turnover is terrible, they see that your financial statement suggests that you're in red, they become very uncomfortable. They're looking for a fairly healthy business. I mean, you can't be going asking for funding when you're already in a deficit.
Right. Now, let's look at the tender itself when you apply for it. One of the things that certainly would come to mind is you need to have a tax clearance certificate. Otherwise, you don't even begin to make it in there. But what are some of the other documents that businesses would need to have to be able to apply for a tender?
Yeah, so I'm glad you mentioned, you know, SARS. I mean, you have to be a registered business. You have to be registered with SARS. And you have to be in good standing, not just be registered with SARS. You have to be in good standing. If you're owing the tax man, you're going to have challenges if you're trying to attend. But then there may be other requirements, compliance-related requirements, because these compliance requirements, they change over time. Most of them are maybe linked to the type of tender that you are bidding for, you know, so it might be your grading, especially people who are in engineering and construction, they tend to have some requirements that relates to, you know, your NHBRC certificates and related documents. So it depends on what sector you're in. Each tender will specify what are the compliance requirements.
Let's go to T-Man in the East Rand. T-Man.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Welcome.
I'm all right. Thanks for having me. And thanks to your guest as well. I'd like to raise two questions, if you may advise on them. I understand you may not have all the answers. In a case where we are a subcontractor and you've been appointed to work and you are working, we realize that there's a limited or actually no funding at all for subcontracting, because we just have problems with the subcontracting arrangements where most main contractors are not trusted. What is it that he can advise can be done to secure subcontracting opportunities? Because plenty of those are there, but seemingly funders are insecure of that. The second question is, I don't know, it is a far-fetched one, but it's related. What do we do in a case where communities don't respect their 30%? It seems like the government is quiet, or business as well. There's just frustration where communities just hope that because they know they must get something, they don't limit it to 30%. They want more than that. In fact, they want the whole cake. They strike, they say, you are not from here, you can't work. People just hope that when they wake up in their street and there's a job being done there, they must just take over and people can come and work. Those are the two questions.
Much appreciated, team, and they're quite detailed there. Limited funding for subcontractors, but also communities that are not in compliance with the 30% requirement. John?
Yeah, so, you know, I think it also boils down to the company that actually won the tender. You know, so if they don't have business ethics and you are subcontracting, there's all sorts of curveballs that come in there. And I think one of the areas where small to medium businesses struggle is where the one that has won the bid tend to take advantage of the fact that they actually don't have resources. They don't have capacity. So they come to you and say, yeah, well, you're supposed to get 30%, but you don't have capacity, you don't have resources. After all, this is my tender. So therefore, because we will help you, we will buy the necessary equipment, you know, to do the job. We will give you what we think is appropriate. So it's better when you're subcontracting, knowing that you've got your own resources and you're well capacitated, so that you can actually ask for the full scale, as opposed to being on the back foot, because then you don't call the shots. If you're on the back foot, you end up taking whatever they saying you need to take. I think that's where the challenge is at. I mean, and very often, even this 30%, you know, some of them, they actually don't even disclose. I mean, you wouldn't know, even if they say 30%, but you don't know the size of the tender. So you just take what, so people do get taken advantage of us. And it's not easy to find information, especially if those that have actually won the tender are well connected. It might be difficult for you to get the full on information. So it means you have to be very careful in your choice of the type of businesses that you subcontract under. Yes, we may be desperate for business, but if the business ethics are questionable, you have to make a choice.
How do the subcontractors get funding? What options do they have here, since there is seemingly reluctance from funders to give them support?
I think it's also about really doing proper research, because I think people tend to be so married to the traditional banks for funding. I mean, there are other agencies, you know, that may be able to fund. You've got the FIDA. You've got different types of agencies that are willing, that are there. But again, it's also about people not having access to that information. But we need to do proper research about potential funders.
011-883-0702, 0727021702. Let's take some of your voice notes on the conversation this morning.
Morning, Thabo. Interesting topic. The reason why small businesses don't get business from other businesses is that there are still people who will not support a small business for no reason. One, two, others, they've got a reason. Poor presentation, poor communication of your business blankets all of us. And thirdly, other companies, they still have those corrupt buyers who want to give businesses to their friends, families, and so on and so forth, which is really sad. Thank you, Zama.
Thank you, Zama. Let's take another one.
Hey, Thabo, you know, when dealing with these things of government, one must remain anonymous. Yo, we're in the process of exiting our businesses with one of the CETAs. Very problematic CETA. They frustrate the process, you know, only hiring, I mean, we have two people in the office that will only work until 12 o'clock. You know, when it comes to dealing and going through people's submissions, when it's come time to get paid, and they'll delay 3, 4 months, 5 months. Peter wants his money, Paul wants his money, everybody wants their money. You can't pay your employees, the people that work for you, they want to leave you, everyone. So yeah, no, exiting, just need to get my last check, and we're out.
Yeah, all right, now you can remain anonymous, it's all well. We don't want to mess up your brain. But John, when is it time to exit? How do you know it's time to exit? I mean, these guys already, they know that this is the last check. But how do you know when it's just not working? And maybe it's just not the model for you to be doing business with the state.
I think you can detect the signals early on, because remember, it doesn't necessarily mean that all government officials are corrupt, you know, as there is a perception of that. But the issue is that, you know, there are different people in different places. I mean, you can tender anywhere, but wherever you are tendering, if you start seeing those things, because I mean, some of the perceptions out there is that, well, if you're not playing the game, therefore, you're going to have those delays which are made intentionally until you succumb to the pressure. But I mean, you have to make a call as a business person as soon as you detect that this is not going away, and if you start feeling that there may be other ethics that are questionable, then I think that's the best time to start looking at exiting. And it doesn't mean if you exit at government tenders, there's nowhere else where you could be looking for business in the private sector. I know it's easier said than done, because a lot of people might find that there's more opportunities with government tenders, but it doesn't mean, if you think creatively, surely there will be many other places where you could launch your business.
And in terms of a growth strategy, I mean, how are you able to design a growth strategy if your business is based on government tender?
I think that's a brilliant question, because if you're doing well with winning these bids, but you need to start using that capital to start diversifying your business, starting to venture even into the private sector, so you don't rely solely on government tender, because things change. If you build your life around government tenders and things change, then you're going to have difficulties in terms of sustainability. So you might as well, while you are still doing well, you start using the money to diversify your business and get into other ventures, so you know that you minimize the risk.
John Manyike, I appreciate your time and thank you very much for helping us navigate this conversation. Head of Financial Education at Old Mutual.